This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com. We got the finale of the Mariners series with the Toronto Blue Jays coming up. 3 o'clock pregame today, 4:07 first pitch. We got Michael Bumpus in with us today, as he is every Monday, Wednesday, and sometimes Friday. And then Julio Rodriguez will join us at 2:30 today. We'll talk to a guy who had a couple of hits last night and was doing his best to help this offense get going. But, man.
Bad. Hey, before we get going, raise your hand if you're super happy that you came in today to the studio for an hour.
I'm raising my hand, guys.
Is Bump
hand.
Happy?
Yes.
Did I miss something?
I get a call from my wife right before we go on. She goes, hey, when'd you leave? I'm like, around 1 o'clock or something like that. And so apparently a tree fell right where I parked my truck. So
every time he parks his truck, right in the same
single
spot,
day,
tree fell there.
Oh, yep. So you are thankful you're here.
Radio saved my truck. Thank you.
Wow.
Maybe your life.
Maybe.
Yeah, it was windy, man. There was a strong wind happening out there. So
got no power. Yeah. By the way, when I drove across
you
the bridge.
You don't have any?
Yeah, we're out.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm hoping by the time the Mariner game starts. They said 4 o'clock. But, when I was driving across the bridge, the wind was blowing like crazy. And clearly, I was like, well, all the fish must be on that side.
That's right.
The wavy side.
Isn't that how it goes?
Rufus Porter would say.
That's not a thing.
No, that's a
thing. Well, Bump, I'm glad your truck averted disaster. And, Dave, hopefully you have power when you get home tonight so you can watch the Mariners take on the Blue Jays and hopefully scratch out a win here. And what a game yesterday. I mean, Logan Gilbert has that one bad inning that could have been a lot less bad if a particular play was made in the outfield. It was an interesting, I don't know, 15 minutes for Steven Souza Jr., where he dove for a ball that I've got to believe he lost it in the lights or it knuckled on him, because he dove in one direction. And the ball was all the way to his left. His left arm was fully extended, and he still didn't come close to touching it. So I don't know where he was diving versus where the ball landed, but it was a terrible play, and it ended up costing them. Now, here's the thing. Had he played it on the hop, field the ball, they score a run.
Doesn't matter.
Still would have been too much.
Yeah.
Because they didn't score any runs. So it didn't look good, but the problem was, you know, you couple that with it within that 15-minute time span of that play and then grounding out, swinging at the very first pitch with the bases loaded, double play. You're like, come on, man. I mean, we talked to him, super nice guy, local guy, root for him. That was about as bad a 10-15-minute stretch as you could imagine one player being involved in.
Yeah, well, and I thought about the same thing about the, I mean, he swings at the first prize or first pitch and gets a double, then everybody's like, oh, man, that was brilliant. But, you know, as far as that, keeping it in front of him, I was listening to Valley on the post game. He's saying, yeah, he probably should have. But, you know, you still look and go, okay, well, maybe we would have lost 1-0. I think that would be probably more frustrating because, you know, it's just 6 hits to, you know, it was just and where do you get the offense from? I mean, where are you going to get a spark from? You think bring Kyle Lewis up? Kelnick, I was looking at what I think he's in the middle of a game right now where he struck out twice and he's been at bat 3 times. So they're playing the Sacramento River Cats, Tacoma Rainiers are. You know, Kyle Lewis is hitting okay down there. But, yeah, I mean, where do you get the spark offensively from?
Yeah, I feel bad for Logan. I think he's experienced what every other pitcher experienced. He was the one who experienced it the least, just not having that run support, right? He goes out, has one bad inning, and the thing about Souza trying to make that play is, like, all right, he was trying to make a play. Like, I appreciate the effort. But, yeah, it's not really a smart decision. I think it was a little far out of his reach. Like you said, Bob, it was to his left. He's diving to his right. It just wasn't a good 15 minutes for the man. But other than that, man, Gilbert did his thing. Just one bad inning.
Yeah, it was a weird moment. And, again, I haven't heard any comments. I don't know if he talked about it after the game, but you see that all the time. You see guys try to dive and make a play, and the ball bounces in front of them. I get it. You're trying to make something happen out there. But the way that one transpired, the ball was so far to the left of where he landed, I'm thinking, what happened to the ball? Was it knuckling, or did you lose it in the lights by the time you right before you left your feet, or what? It was just so far off that it didn't make sense.
Something happened. He's a pro, right?
Yeah, and then to swing at the first pitch, I mean, he had the bases loaded. He walked the guy in front of you. Okay? He's struggling. The pitcher's struggling. Take a look. Make him throw a strike. You go up there hacking at the first pitch, and you ground into a double play that kills an opportunity there. I mean, that's just not great baseball. I mean, there's no other way to say it. So, especially when the offense is struggling the way that it is to score runs, incredibly frustrating. And you know, the guys that you've been leaning on in Ty France and J.P. Crawford have scuffled the past couple of games. They were combined 0-for-8 in the game yesterday. So there's got to be others to pick up the slack. Now, Julio, again, we'll talk to Julio Rodriguez coming up at 2:30. He was 2-for-3 last night, had a stolen base, got caught stealing, but, you know, he was doing his part. He was the only guy that had multiple hits last night. You know, you had one hit from Winker, who's got a 9-game hitting streak, which is good. You know, you like to see him coming out of it and starting to look more like what we were sold he was going to be coming from Cincinnati. But nobody's really tearing it up. And when your two top guys in France and Crawford aren't getting it done, it feels like this is a very, very shallow lineup, to say the least.
Well, it just takes one game to turn it around. But, yeah, and you know, it's funny. We were going into that game last night with Gilbert talking about how much run support he has gotten. And it was really good. And coming in, and then he gets zero. So just frustrating for him. And I don't know if he's going to start to – is this going to start to weigh on the pitching staff a little bit? You know, I think those guys are professionals, and they go out and, you know, no matter what, they're just going to do their job. But, yeah, it's got to get to you after a while.
I mean, you go out there and you try to control what you can control. And for the pitchers, that's on the mound. But at some point, you got to be in that dugout and be like, come on, fellas. Like, I'm out here grinding. You know, give me one or two, and let's make this thing interesting. So, like Dave just mentioned, Gilbert finally got a taste of what everyone else in rotation
has been dealing with. What Chris Flexen's been getting all year.
Especially Chris. Goodness.
Yeah, and it's – I don't think they'd ever say anything like, come on, guys, give me –
No.
Yeah. Is he thinking it? Probably.
For sure.
I would imagine it's not at the front of mind when they take the hill, but once they give up a run, how do you not think about, geez, I can't – I gotta stop the bleeding right now. We just don't have the offense to come back. If I get this gets too far out of hand or they put up a few runs, feels like the game's over, which in this case – would be accurate. If they scored one run, you lose 1-0. So even if Souza made a good play on that ball, which he did not, he gives up a run, fields that ball, throws it back in, it's 1-0, and hopefully they get out of the inning. It might even be more frustrating because they still lose.
Who would have known that Julio would be carrying you right now through this series? I mean, it looked really good with the Mets, but you know, now when you go and look how it's all dropped off, and you know, the one I didn't see on the when he stole the base, but on the one where he was caught stealing, did you see him take a peek? I'm wondering, are you supposed to do that?
What do you mean?
I didn't
when
want
he was
to
running,
ask him.
Looking at the
home plate. Yeah, looking at the
catcher.
Yeah,
they tell you not to.
Yeah. I was just wondering if that was just a, you know, a rookie move, and he's probably done it before and gotten in there.
Yeah.
And that, I think...
You see it a lot. A lot of guys do it. You'll see him running, check, and Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm just wondering if that's something maybe that Service was coaching him up about in the dugout afterwards, and they were having a little discussion after that. And he was talking about the pitch count. I think he said something about a fastball. I was just reading his lips, but you know, it was just kind of a learning experience for him. I thought it was interesting. You'll hear from him later. He's what a great kid, and he's just, you know, it's very early for him. This guy is very young and just having a lot of success. But I just saw that one little thing, and I'm like, yeah, I wonder if that was maybe one of the things that the skipper kind of coached him up on.
That makes sense. And in football, as a DB, if you are beat, the last thing you want to do is look. And mm-hmm. I would assume that stealing second base, like you're trying to beat the ball to second base. But if you focus on your mission, you get a step or two. But who knows? But he's such a great athlete. He's probably done it before. He's probably gotten away with it and got caught.
You see it all the time. You see guys do it all the time. They coach you not to, but, I mean, they do it. And I think it was more about him guessing he was trying to run on an off-speed pitch, and he ran on a fastball. So,
yeah.
Listen, he's been incredibly successful. He's going to get caught. He's going to attempt that often. I mean, he's almost – the second he's on first base, you go, okay, it's not a matter of if he goes, it's when he goes, as long as there's obviously nobody in front of him. But he's going to steal. It's just, you know, it's coming. You just don't know exactly when. So there's going to be a lot of attempts. He's going to get caught again. That's how it goes. But he's been incredibly adept at stealing bases. He leads the league. So he's been a huge positive. And him coming up with two hits yesterday, had the hardest hit ball in all of baseball last night for all of the games yesterday at just under 114, I think, on that shot out of the infield. So
I think that was the excellent velo on his home run in New York,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, so he's squaring the ball up. He's hitting the ball hard. But unfortunately, it's not a group effort right now. And Scott Servais talking after the game, talking about Logan being great, but it all came down to that one inning.
Yeah, we got to change the record, don't we? It's the same old song. Outstanding outing by Logan tonight. He was great, really. Ran into trouble there a little bit in the second. Thought he was going to work his way through it. It was kind of the story of the game was the second inning. We hit into a double play, and they found a hole and got their runs in. But outstanding pitch game on both sides. Logan was outstanding.
Yeah, struck out 9 in that game, and you saw the difference because both pitchers were in the exact same scenario, trying to pitch their way out of trouble with the bases loaded. Logan doesn't come up, doesn't get the help that he needs in the outfield, and then you saw what happened with the Blue Jays and the double play being turned on that first pitch from Souza. So, yeah, two exact scenarios, both pitchers in that bit of trouble. One gets out of it, the other doesn't, and that's the difference. That those two moments.
They're making the Mariners are making these games stressful. You know what I mean? Like, there's no room for error these past 4 or 5 games. But we should be accustomed to that. That was all last year, right? Games were super close, no room for error. So if there's anything, most of these guys have been in these situations before, and you listen to them talk, and they sound like they know they're going to climb themselves out of this. So at least there's a positive.
Well, hopefully things get turned around tonight. You got a 4-game series with Boston, who's struggling. So you're they're at home, which it's not easy, certainly, to win on the road against any team, whether they're killing it or struggling. And we saw what they were able to do against the Mets, who were crushing it. But Boston has lost 6 of their last 10. They're 14-22. So hopefully the Mariners can get this final game. They got Marco on the hill. You like the chances there. Hopefully they can get that one and then right into Boston and capitalize on a team that's struggling a bit out there. Meanwhile, Seahawks news. Mike Salk had Clint Hurt on the program today, and they talked about a few different things. Talked about the defensive shift. How they're, the change in the defense, and we'll all see it at some point. We're just hearing people talking about it. But he just talked about playing a zone match defense and how that's going to help the secondary.
That's where things, it's going to help out. Well, number one, it helps the guys on the back end where you can play stickier and challenge routes more and be in position to get your hands on the football a lot more. Two, it also helps affect the pass rush, Because now if we can make that quarterback choke and kind of hold on to the other split second, that's usually what you need for the rush in order to be able to get home. So that's the big part right now that our guys are going through and learning and doing really well with that right now.
These guys have to love this because this is the opposite of what they've been playing on pass defense.
Explain a zone match defense.
Well, I'll get to it, yeah, because it's – and I don't think it's as big of a difference as everybody thinks it is, with like the 3-4 with 4-3 principles. But the way that they played defense, pass defense in the past is that we're going to drop back to our zones and keep everything in front of us. Yeah. We're not going to jump anything. Of course, they did jump some underneath routes unnecessarily, as I like to talk about. But, I mean, it's – they used to play the sit back, bend but don't break type of defense. And now what he's talking about is kind of, you're not leaving your zone. So just as an example, and this is what it means to me, I'll ask you about it too, Bump. But as far as a zone match, you're dropping to a zone, but you're not covering a piece of dirt. You're dropping 12 to 15, but if somebody comes into, your zone, you're going to, what I call crowd them. Which means don't jump them, but you're going to crowd close enough to them that you're able to make a play on the ball. And that's what he's talking about, that these guys are going to play a little stickier. It's going to help the pass rush. I've been saying this for years. As far as the pass rush goes, they don't have time to get home because they're playing such loose defense. So I think it's going to be more, risky, a little bit more of a gamble, but I'm all for it because their defense, especially pass defense, it's just been horrible. It's just been sit back, don't give up a touchdown and let a 15-yard completion happen underneath you in your zone.
Yeah, when I hear Clint speak and then I'm listening to Carl Scott talk and all that, when I think of zone match and the way I hear them explain it, that makes sense on the linebacker level. You're not going to just cover space. You're going to cover a guy and crowd him and make him uncomfortable. I think on the back end it means that once a guy does a certain thing, now he's yours. Like, I remember seeing Carl Scott talk about it. He goes, look, if they line up in a 3-by-1, this is our coverage. A 2-by-2, this is our coverage. Yeah. A 3-by-1, this is your rule. If number two rolls out to the flat and he turns upfield, he's yours regardless, when typically your job might have been, okay, I just have the flat. But now they're allowing these guys to get sticky, and that's going to help the pass rush. He's talking about having the quarterback choke and second guess because he's seeing zone alignment, and then when that ball is snapped, his receivers are doing certain things and guys are jumping on
him. Why do you think they went the other way before? Is it about the talent? Is it about the personnel saying, well, I don't know if we got the guys.
Huh? You mean Kenny?
Yeah. Yeah. Why would you run it that way? Is it about maybe what your guys couldn't do? So, hey, this is going to – it's better that we just limit the damage, take what's in front of us, give up the 4-5 versus getting sticky and then getting burned. Is that what that's about?
I think it's a combination of a few things. I think it's philosophy. Guys, they learn as coaches, and then they say, look, this is the defense that I want to play. And then you're also adjusting to what the league is doing, and the league is spreading guys out. And I think with this type of defense, it allows quarterbacks to have to make the tough throws. Legion of Boom, you just have some dogs back there who are great at reading the eyes of the quarterback, dropping to a space and kind of feeling what's going on. So it's a mix of everything. It's never just one thing. And I think personnel, philosophy, and the way the league is evolving has a lot to do with it.
I think it's coaching philosophy, man. And this was something I saw over the last couple of years, that they don't trust their players. Why don't you trust your players? You know, you drafted these guys. The personnel department, you know, got these young guys, and, you know, like Marquise Blair. And they, you know, he made a couple mistakes his rookie year, but let him work through it, man. Let him play sticky defense. Let him get beat, you know, get burned every once in a while. That's going to happen in the NFL. You have these quarterbacks and all the rules, everything. So, yeah, to me, I'm much more excited to watch this defense. And I think the difference in philosophy is just, you know, the bend but don't break. And, you know, I don't want to, you know, give up a touchdown on one play. We're going to, you know, and the thing is they had takeaways in, was it 2019? I think they had more takeaways than anybody in the league. And that gives you, you know, if you keep it in front of you, that's kind of the philosophy is, hey, we're going to take it away from them at some point. But you're not going to get many interceptions because nobody's playing tight defense. So, yeah, I love hearing that from Clint. I think you're going to have a totally different attitude, and I think also that this is going to be the biggest difference as far as the change on this team, free agents, draft choices, all that stuff. The biggest difference will be those three new coaches on defense.
That's difference, Dave.
Difference.
Okay.
Well, it's not Thursday when Paul Moyer's
on. It's Thursday. One more from Clint. He talked about being more aggressive, but that not necessarily meaning they're going to be constantly blitzing.
No, I wouldn't agree with that.
Okay, good.
Well, yeah, what I would say is just everything is all about how you teach it.
Okay.
And making sure you're playing sound football and not putting players in compromised positions. That's obviously my job, and we're not going to do that. We're going to be – you can still be aggressive. And aggressive does not always mean that you're blitzing all the time either. You know, there's a way how you coach things, the mentality that you want to give your players to have confidence in what they're doing is the aggressive mentality we're talking about. And will we have pressures? Absolutely. But we can rush 4 and drop 7 and still have an aggressive mindset, a physical mindset collectively as a whole.
Okay. Why good we're not blitzing? No, I don't – you know, they're going to take their chances, you know, probably not more than anybody else. But, yeah, I mean, it's just a totally different philosophy of the way that they run their defenses. And it's going to be really interesting to and more fun to watch, I think. I just I got so tired of that. And look, the numbers showed it. They were – when we did those numbers, Bob, it was, what, 31st, I think they were in pass defense.
They were kind of 30th, 31st, 30th, 29th, yeah, and everything defensively. So, yeah, for the most part, it was not good. It was not a good result. So, I'm like you, I'm excited just because there's a new voice and because there seems to be new eyes. And I know he's been there, but just, hey, now it's his baby. And let him, you know, he probably, I picture him behind the scenes being like, maybe asking the same questions we were, like, what are you doing? Yeah. Why are we dropping Carlos Dunlap? And why is Puna Ford in coverage? Why are we – what are we doing with Jamal Adams? Why is Benson Mayoa dropping into – you know what I mean? It's not his defense, so I don't know how that dynamic works, but I that's how I envision it. It's just internally he's saying that. Externally he's probably going, okay, that's what you want, coach. That's what we'll do. And now that it's his baby, he can go, okay, now let's get down to it. Let's fix what was wrong with this defense.
As an assistant coach, you have to back up your coordinator, even if you don't agree with what he's doing. So he was just being a good soldier. But you're right. Now he's like, okay, I see what the league is doing. I'm going to bring in some guys that I've worked with. I see how we can be effective. And I love the 3-4 because it allows your edge rusher just to be so dynamic, man. That's why I want to see what Boye looks like in this defense. I want to see how they use the overhangs. And if you listen to the rest of his interview with Salk, he mentions in detail kind of the things that they're going to do. So it's going to look different, and it should be fun.
Nice. All right. We love when this guy is doing this segment, right? Right, Dave?
Yes, he's excited.
Why
should
sure don't?
I just got an eye roll there. I got an eye
Very
roll
excited.
From our buddy Matt. It's time to take two.
Evan White made his 2022 debut in a rehab assignment for AAA Tacoma today. The 2, 3, and 4 hitters in the Rainiers lineup were Kyle Lewis, Jared Kelnick, and Evan White.
You see the eye roll I got there?
Oh, do you see also he put a little flair there? He didn't really say AAA Tacoma like it was written. He kind of put his own little
spin. Very passionate about baseball, Dave.
I know you
know that by now.
Well, we love when Matt is in. But that's what's funny is those are the three names you looked at as part of the core, part of the future of this franchise. And there are question marks attached to each one of them for different reasons right now where we're like, I'm not sure if that's the future. You hope it's part of the future. Evan White has just been riddled with injuries. Yeah. Couldn't hit at the major league level. His glove was beyond spectacular, so there was one side of his game that was great, but we still don't know if the guy can hit at the big league level. Jared Kelnick is well documented, and then Kyle Lewis, what's he going to be? He's a part-time player, full-time DH, play in the field every once in a while. We just don't know.
This is sad because the one guy we know can hit has like a knee problem.
Yeah.
You know, with Kyle Lewis. So, yeah, I'm just watching. I mentioned earlier Jared Kelnick. I'll have to check out his game with the Sacramento River Cats right now, but he was 0 for 3 with a couple of strikeouts. I think he's 1 for 5 in Tacoma since he went down. So, yeah, it's just frustrating. He's going to have to work it out. I don't know if anybody's starting to give up on him. It's way too early for that. But, man, if he doesn't repair on this trip, I'm going to start wondering.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that these three pieces were pieces you thought you'd be counting on at this point. So the fact that they're still in development, you can be discouraged, but, man, it's a long haul. So hopefully Kyle Lewis gets back, gets healthy. Kelnick figures it out to play. So does Evan White. We got injuries involved as well. A lot of things happening, but when these three aren't on the field, I mean, disappointment.
The Colts signed free agent running back Philip Lindsay and waived former Washington State running back Max Borgie, who had signed with the Colts as an undrafted free agent.
He's available?
Championship. Sign him, Bob.
He's available to make somebody a champion. That's what I've been told anyway.
Coug, Colt hero.
Yeah.
Right?
He is. He's
Max
a legend.
Borgie is.
See the picture of him with the Apple Cup trophy and a cigar? He's a legend, man.
What are the Colts thinking?
Sign him.
What are the Colts thinking?
Well, they're thinking, we got Jonathan Taylor. We're probably pretty good. Philip Lindsay, you know, that was a guy that started off. I think he was an undrafted free agent.
Yep.
And
Denver,
he
right?
picked up over 1,000 yards the first 2 years in Denver that he was there. Yeah, he was just fantastic. And, it's kind of tailed off for him a little bit. But how dare he replace Max Borgie? And how dare the Seahawks not sign him right away?
Yeah, how long till and I haven't checked the text yet, but
right
how long till they come in saying, Seahawks got to sign him. They'd be stupid not to. Sign him. And Gardner Minshew.
Any Coug, any Husky needs to be on the roster.
Yeah, that's what we've been told.
Both sides right
that's
now.
That's what we've been told. All right, take two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/CyberKnifeProstate. He's been a big bright spot for this Mariner team over the past few weeks, and he joins us next. Julio Rodriguez coming your way. It's Wyman and Bob with Michael Bumpus. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
It is time for our player spotlight, everybody, here with Wyman and Bob. We do it Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, talking to Mariner players. And Dave, if I said, tell me which Mariner player is hitting .339 with a .391 on base percentage for the month of May, who do you think we'd be talking about?
Julio Rodriguez.
That's exactly right. That is a great guess, and he is with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Julio Rodriguez is here. How are you, man?
I'm doing really good. How about you guys?
We're doing great. We appreciate you taking a few minutes with us, and as I just gave the numbers there, .339 average, .381 on base percentage this month. You feel like you're comfortable now. Would you say that's true?
I mean, yeah, you can say that. I feel like I'm more like I am myself, like doing my thing, like kind of like playing my strength more than anything else. And I thought that's why everything is being able to play out in a better way.
Well, one thing he forgot was that you lead the league in stolen bases with 11, Julio. Tell us about how that's progressed. I saw last night you were talking to Scott after, you know, after, I don't know if it was a stolen base or maybe you got caught. But, yeah, I mean, you've just been amazing that way. Tell us about the development, how much these coaches at this level have helped you with the base stealing.
I mean, it's been very good. Definitely here and there a few little tips that we'll be talking about. But everything is developing very good, you know. Like, I put a lot of work in the offseason that's playing out right now. So I feel pretty happy with my running game right now, too.
Yeah. You know, Julio, one of the things we talked a lot about, and I know you got a lot of questions about it, and that was early in the season, some of the strike three calls you were getting had to be so frustrating. We were, as fans, we were watching and yelling at the TV, you know, yelling at the umps. Yet you always seem to keep your cool. And for a guy your age with, you know, such little experience at this level, that was impressive. How frustrated were you? How hard was it to keep your cool during that period where it seemed like every at-bat you were getting bad calls?
I mean, I just have to keep it cool because I feel like the only thing that I would have done if I would have started talking or saying something back, I would have just made the situation worse. It was already bad with the call strikes and all that. So if I would have had like a different behavior on that play, it just would have made the situation worse. And like, God, right now, as I was saying, like, damn, everything's playing out a little better, and I'm getting the right calls and everything's feeling better now.
That's really wise of you. Now, was there anybody, Julio, that you sort of leaned on during that period? Was it the skipper? Was it teammates? Your family? Who did you talk to during that time?
It was kind of like everybody here on the team. Honestly, everybody was seeing what was happening, and they were kind of having my back and telling me, "Yo, all right, what goes around comes around. It's gonna come around. You will see. He's not gonna say like that the whole time." So they kind of all of them just kept on talking to me, even Skip. My teammates, everybody, and as you can see, everything is changing now, so I'm happy to see that.
Hey, Julio, I'm sure you obviously grew up playing baseball as a little kid all the way till now and dreamed of being in the big leagues and probably had pictures in your mind of what it was going to be like. And now that you're here and you're out there, you're doing a ton of interviews and signing autographs and people know who you are, is it the way you pictured it? Is it better? Is it different? How does it feel to you?
No, probably better than I thought, honestly. I didn't have the clear idea. Now that I have the clear idea, it's just probably better than I thought.
Just because you're talking to us mostly, though, right?
Maybe.
Well, Julio, when you were coming into the league, was there, because you're going to be a player that some young kid who's probably, you know, a few years behind you wants to be, but who was a player when you came into the league that you wanted to be like?
I mean, I always say that A-Rod was my favorite player, and there's definitely like really good players right now that I like. But in the beginning, I just wanted to be myself and kind of just play the game my way. I know I have a lot of respect for a lot of players, but players I want to be like just like myself, honestly.
Gotcha. Hey, you made that move to center field, and you've done it really, really well. It seemed like very early in the season, you know, maybe there were some communication things going on with left field, right field. And it seemed like all of a sudden, boom, it was just natural, and it's like you've played there your entire life. How have things felt defensively for you in center field?
Really good. Really good, honestly. Just as you said, here and there a few little things, but we were able to clean that up, and this game is. This game my adjustment. So I had to make a few adjustments. I did it, got it done, and now we're playing ball back there too.
Julio, you pretty much do everything, but what's your favorite play, would you say? Is it stolen base, robbing a catch maybe out in center field, hitting a home run?
Do I gotta pick one? Or just
yes, you do. You have to pick one. I'm sorry, my man.
I'm gonna stick to doing it all then.
Okay. Just one answer that it pretty much encompasses everything.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Yep.
All right.
Hey, is there a team or a pitcher that you see on the schedule you look at and go, man, I can't wait to face him. I can't wait to test myself against this pitcher or this team?
I mean, I don't know because everybody here is a big leader, so, and there's a lot of guys that I haven't faced yet. So I'm pretty excited facing everybody, honestly.
Julio, family been on the road trip? You got a chance to catch up with them very much on this road trip?
Yes, in New York. in New York, I was able to see them. It was a really cool time.
Nice. Well, and you were able to come up, obviously, with that home run, and you guys win the series against the Mets, who are red hot. Just playing in that stadium, we know Jesse Winker was having fun with the fans out there while you guys were there. What was that atmosphere like?
It was amazing, honestly. It was amazing. I loved the fans playing there. The fans were definitely intense, but I loved it. Like, I come from the Dominican Republic, and the fans over there are really, 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 really intense. So it got me like a little reminder. You got like a little reminder from what it is to play back home. So I feel pretty happy I was playing, honestly.
Have you said anything back to opposing fans yet, or are you waiting for that?
What did you say?
Oh, are you talking to the opposing fans at all? They're probably giving you the business out there, talking to you. But have you chipped back at them yet?
No, not yet.
You're waiting.
I let them talk. I just play.
Yeah. Hey, the pitching obviously at the big league level is so different than it is in the minor leagues. Is there one pitcher you face, whether it's Verlander or anybody else, where you just go, man, I've never seen anything like that standing at the plate?
Not yet. I can't remember. I can't. I gotta think about it because, you know, it just also depends on how you feel that day too. I gotta think about it. There's some days you can see the ball well, some days you don't. So I got to think about that one.
Okay. Hey, it just as far as teammates on the team, is there somebody that you gravitate towards, or somebody that you look to, you talk to more than any other that you're buddies with?
I feel like I talk pretty much to a lot of people here, honestly. Let's say Eugenio Suarez, Jesse Winker, J.P. Crawford, Ty France, even the pitchers. I feel like I have a really good connection with everybody. Ernest Elias just got here to the team. I talk a lot to him. I got a chance to talk to him a lot during the spring training too. Louis Torrens, everybody. So I don't know. I can't tell you one that I'm the closest with. I thought I'm pretty close to a lot of people here.
Who's the funniest guy on the team?
Huh?
Who's the funniest guy in that clubhouse? Who makes you laugh?
Oh, there's a lot. There's a lot of them, but Jesse Winker is definitely up there.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds about right. Well, Julio, congratulations on the way things have been going for you. It's a lot of fun to watch you out there every single night. And we wish you nothing but the best and look forward to talking to you again. Thanks so much for taking time with us.
Thank you so much.
There you go. There's Julio Rodriguez. If you missed any of that conversation or any conversation we have during the week, all you need to do is head to the podcast page at seattlesports.com. Click the podcast tab. Click on our picture. It'll be waiting for you after the show. Each and every day, click subscribe so you never have to go through that process again. It's one time. Hit subscribe, as Dave Wyman tells you.
Don't look at me.
Dave Wyman tells you all the time.
I can't get my freaking email open.
That's because they want you to quit, Dave.
They do. They do want me to quit.
And also search Wyman and Bob wherever you get your podcast. Apple, Spotify,
I ain't quitting.
Wherever it is. All right. This hour of Wyman and Bob is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. So what if the bounce back doesn't come for this Mariners offense? It is What If Wednesday, so we'll play out that hypothetical. Coming up next, it is Wyman and Bob. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
What?
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 It's time for What If Wednesday.
Coach would have put me in fourth quarter. We'd have been state champions, no doubt.
Wyman and Bob rewrite the scripts of major moves and moments in sports every Wednesday afternoon. Now step into an alternative reality with Wyman and Bob.
We do it every Wednesday. We play out the hypothetical here with Wyman and Bob. What If Wednesday, presented by Mazda of Everett. And today's question, hypothetical. Hopefully it's hypothetical. What if the bounce back doesn't come for the Mariners offense? I don't know why Lefko's so negative. He plants like this negative bomb, and then he's not here with us to take the shrapnel.
Okay, here's what I'm going to say. This is what we'll do. We're all going to Tacoma. They have Thirsty Thursdays down there, or Thursdays, as some people call it. Moya. We'll go down there. You know, maybe they'll send down. Maybe Julio will go on a slump. You know, we'll see Kelnick down there.
Herbie gets sent down. We'll watch that version of the Mariners.
Evan White. Yeah. I mean, Matt Brash. We're going to Tacoma, boys.
Let's go.
That's what happens.
Yeah, that's a hypothetical I don't really want to contemplate. And I'm betting that they will get things turned around. To what extent, we'll find out. But on paper, this is a better offense than you had last year. They
They had their moments last year, but, I mean, across the board, this is a really poor hitting team. They ended the season with a negative 51 run differential. It was all about their bullpen and timely hitting, but they were certainly far from consistent. So playing out the hypothetical what if they don't bounce back, then Jerry DePoto is under a lot of heat for roster construction. Because I know people will want to point at Service for particular moments here and there, but there have been very few moments that I could look at and go, well, he should have done this. He should have played that guy instead of this guy. Or why didn't he do that? I mean, I don't know what he could do that he hasn't done with what he's got at his disposal. Other than I was questioning why you'd have Toro, who's really been struggling leading off as often as he does. But outside of that, you'd be looking at Jerry DePoto going, what's going on? This was the team. This was a trade you made with Cincinnati. You brought in Frazier. This was you felt great about your offense. What's going on?
I think there have been enough moments, right? Winker's come around. Suarez has had his moments. Julio has had his. Everyone on the pitching staff, minus Brash getting pulled up, had their moments. So I think they've had their moments. Are we giving up on May already, though? I mean, Boston's not playing great. The A's aren't playing great. Houston's doing their thing. Baltimore's not great. I mean, yeah, I'd like to see the bounce back in June, but I think there's some games in May that they can still get.
You know, I'm surprised if you go and look, because they started out really well as far as their ranking in on the slash line, you know, average on base percentage slugging, and they're 19th, 12th, and 18th. That kind of surprises me.
Currently they are?
Yeah. Because, well, first of all, they started off top five in all mm-hmm. three categories, but I thought it would be worse than that just because it feels worse. And that's the thing when you go day by day. I mean, we were all so excited 2 days ago. Monday, you know, waiting for the Toronto game to start, that, you know, you come off of a stand with a team that had never been beaten in a series, and you were actually, you know, close to sweeping them. And 2 days later, we're like, what if we don't?
Well, I blame this on Lefko. He planted the negative bomb here, and then he's like I said, he's not here to held accountable.
He throws a hand grenade into a room and then shuts the door.
Yeah. So, here, guys, what if this happens? And now we have to deal with it. But I think they will bounce back. Again, we'll find out to what extent. But, yeah, if that were to hold true, if for whatever reason it just never became consistent and they continued to struggle like this, DePoto's going to be under a lot of heat. I mean, what else could happen? I mean, Service is going to do the best with what he's got at his disposal, try to move the chess pieces around and figure out who's hot and where they fit in the lineup and all of that, but there's only so much you can do with those pieces that aren't functioning. I don't know how he makes them function. We had people, Dave, remember texting in, well, he's got a light of fire under him.
Yeah.
Nobody's lacking enthusiasm. Nobody's lacking intensity. Nobody's lacking the want to or the try hard. If anything, it's too much that way, and maybe he's got to calm him down. You know, that was Kelnick. We looked at him, and you could feel him just gripping that bat, and you could see it in other guys really trying hard. Maybe it's the other message, like, all right, guys, listen, let's get out there, relax, have some fun. Remember why you play this game. Yes, it is a business. You make a lot of money to do it, but you got into this game because you love it. And right now you don't look like you love it out there. So go out there and play with some level of joy, and maybe that'll bring a different result, because trying harder in baseball doesn't work.
Nah, it don't work that way. Internally, I don't know what else he can do, though, right? You send down Brash, you bring up Kirby. You send down Kelnick, you're waiting on Kyle Lewis and Evan White to see how that works out. Internally, he's moving some pieces around trying to figure out what's going to work out for him. But end of the day, these guys got to go down to AAA and just develop. I mean, you're right? There's no – I've never seen a movie – I'm trying to think about this. Yeah, I guess I've seen a couple movies where the skipper gets up and there's this inspirational speech in baseball where you all run out, you play with so much emotion. Like, not the same football. Even in football, I tell guys, like, all right, man, after the first series, all that stuff is worn out. Like, the better team is going to win this game. So you can't try harder. And I see him making some moves internally.
You know what Service needs to do? He needs to get everybody in the shower, throw bats in there,
scare them,
and call them a bunch of lollygaggers.
Lollygaggers.
Lollygag to first. I heard the other day Logan Gilbert talking about his favorite baseball movies, mm-hmm. but it's got to be a generational thing. But Bull Durham. It doesn't show up enough.
It's the best.
Yeah, remember Kevin Costner, Crash Davis? He's like, yeah, go scare him.
They're kids.
Go scream scare at him. Yeah.
And I like whatever the record was. What's our record, Larry? 8-22. How did we even win 8?
Yeah.
whatever the record was. That was just, that movie's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So as far as what Service does, I I don't know, man.
Well, I mean, I guess if you're a personnel guy, you're like, hey, coach him up. You know, I mean, there's plenty of coaching that goes on. You know, Manny Acta, you know, all the Perry Hill, all the things that he's done in
McGrone
the field.
And everybody, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, Jerry can still make moves, right? We're not, you know, there's a trade deadline coming up. Maybe they can get a piece. Maybe they have an idea of something. But I don't know if they're going to want to do that for this year if they get too far in the hole.
Well, and that's the question. We were talking about that in the sports pit the other day. Like, all right, what do we expect at the trade deadline? And you're kind of looking at it going, well, I guess we're going to figure out how far out they are at that point. Are they within a couple games? Are they in the lead? Are they 10 games back? I mean, that's going to dictate a lot of what they do and don't do as far as acquisitions and trades and things like that. But I'm still holding true to the line, Dave. No excuses.
Oh, okay.
No, they don't make the postseason. Sorry. It's a fail.
I thought we were going back to last year. Not sustainable.
Yeah, well, that wasn't.
It's not sustainable.
It's not. It's
well,
not.
This isn't.
No.
Yeah, six hits, zero runs.
No,
it's not sustainable, Bob.
Can't do it, Bob.
Can't do it.
Can't do it.
Can't do it.
Can't win with
him.
Can't do it. Mike Singletary will tell you.
Can't win with him.
Can't do it. All right. Well, hopefully things start turning around today in the finale against the Toronto Blue Jays. We're going to turn you over to the pregame show coming up here at 3 o'clock. Want to thank our guests, Julio Rodriguez, and, of course, Michael Bumpus, who is with us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So we appreciate those guys. If you missed any of it, head to the podcast page, seattlesports.com. Click the podcast tab. Click on our picture. It's waiting for you after the show each and every day. And click subscribe. That way you don't have to go through that process ever again. Search Wyman and Bob wherever you get your podcast. We'll be back tomorrow right here with Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports Station on 710.